From NPR News, this is Weekends on All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. Since January of this year, when Republicans took over the House, Congress has passed just 24 bills, and a third of them have been for things like naming buildings. But by this time last year, 98 bills were sent to the president, four times as many as this year. And historian Sean Wilentz, who teaches at Princeton, says it reminds him of one other period in congressional history.
It was a peculiar situation where President Harry Truman called a special session of Congress.
I called a special session of Congress in November 17, 1947. And I set out a 10-point program for the welfare and benefit of this country, among other things, standby price control. I got nothing. Congress has still done nothing.
It allowed Truman to run for the presidency and win against all odds by lambasting the do-nothing Republican Congress.
Now, the dynamic may be different today, but the tension between the White House and the House of Representatives is similar. But what may make this period even more challenging, not just for President Obama, but even for some congressional Republicans, is a group within the party that sees compromise as a four-letter word. They are the 83 freshman Republicans, the so-called Tea Party members. Here's one of them, Tom Graves of Georgia, speaking this past week about why he won't vote to raise the debt limit.
Let's put government in a box and shrink the box over 5 years. This is no time to compromise. We've got to hold firm right now. We have $14 trillion in debt. We cannot continue to compromise America's future.
Our cover story today, how compromise is becoming another word for sellout among many in the Republican Party. Now, it seemed for a brief moment last weekend that President Obama and the Republican House Speaker John Boehner were close to making a deal over how to raise the debt limit. Right now, the government can't run a debt higher than $14.3 trillion without Congress's approval. And without that approval, the U.S. government could soon go into default. That deal fell apart because of opposition among rank-and-file Republicans. And former House Speaker Dennis Hastert says a big reason it did was because so many House Republicans felt they weren't being consulted.
They want input into the process, too. So the problem is, if you carry on these high-level negotiations, you have a lot of members who really feel that they're being shut out of the process.
Right now, the White House is considering an alternative plan presented by Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate. He wants Republicans to pass a bill opposing an increase in the debt ceiling, but the bill would be written in such a way to allow the president to veto it and raise the debt ceiling anyway. That would allow Republicans to vote against it and prevent default. It's not pretty, but it's politics, and it allows Republicans to avoid a more complicated compromise. And it's the kind of thing that rankles Mike Castle. He's a Republican who was a governor and a congressman from Delaware. Last year, he was defeated in a primary by a Tea Party Republican who tarred him with the epithet compromiser.
I don't think there's any question that the word compromise or the act of compromising has become a strong negative with certain elements of the Republican Party, perhaps most notably those embodied by the different tenets of the Tea Party. This makes it very difficult to achieve the greater good as far as the public is concerned. There are times when compromise is essential if we're going to be able to move forward with governmental solutions. And I think we're facing one of those right now as we deal with the debt ceiling issue and, in my judgment, a potential significant crisis from an economic point of view in this country on August 2nd.
Mike Castle, do you believe that the Tea Party and the Tea Party freshmen, about 83 of them in the House of Representatives, is it having a negative effect on the Republicans in Congress right now?
Clearly, there's been a division here, and it's not just those freshmen who are elected. There are other members of the House of Representatives who were there before who've pledged to follow the same route, if you will. And that clearly is why the term compromise and the actual act of compromising has become a negative as far as Republicans are concerned. It's the reason that they're having trouble sitting down and trying to work out a final solution here.
Do you think that if a deal is not struck, the public will blame the Republicans?
Yeah, I think Republicans are going to be blamed. Republicans are going to blame Democrats, too. But the bottom line is that, you know, if they believe Republicans have been too recalcitrant, that's going to be a threat. And I would believe that the Republican leadership, who's been through this before, understands that and is one reason that they would probably like to work out a solution, but they have the internal problems that we've just discussed.
Let me ask you this question. You were considered to be a moderate Republican. Do you recognize the Congressional Republican Caucus as it operates now?
You know, it is somewhat different than it was when I arrived, when there were a number of moderates. On the other hand, there was a great reduction in moderate Republicans even in the time that I was there. And by the time I left, you know, there were many fewer of us than there were, you know, 18 years ago when I started. So you have much more polarized views of the two political parties going on in the House of Representatives at this point.
David Brooks, a conservative columnist, wrote a column recently, and I'm sure you read it, where he writes that the Republican Party, and I'm quoting him, may no longer be a normal party. It's a party infected, he writes, by a faction that is more of a psychological protest than a practical governing alternative. Do you think there is something to what he wrote?
Yeah, I think there is something to what he wrote. I worry about the absolute positions that the Tea Party takes. I mean, I'm a living example of the effect of the Tea Party. I had a substantial lead in the polls in Delaware, and, you know, a small element came together and took me out in a primary and nominated an individual who, unfortunately, just never really had a shot as a Republican of getting elected in a state that tends not to be that Republican. And, you know, they seem to be perfectly happy in taking out individuals who are more moderate, such as me, and calling us Republicans in name only. And I'm not sure they even really care what happens at the end in terms of who gets elected.
That's former Republican Congressman and Governor Mike Cashel of Delaware. Governor Cashel, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Jonathan Allen is a reporter who covers Congress for Politico, and he says it's not the Tea Party that's leading the Republicans in Congress today.
The Tea Party, in a way, sometimes gets a little too much credit for their influence in the freshman class. Sure, they're a little harder core, but the freshmen are actually pretty reflective of the Republican conference as a whole. Some of them may be a little bit more aggressive in their beliefs, but really when you're talking about not wanting to raise taxes, things like that, wanting to cut spending, they really reflect the values of this House Republican majority.
So now you believe that the vast majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives don't like to compromise, don't want to compromise on most things?
I think there's a handful of things on which they're unwilling to compromise, certainly on whether to raise the rates of taxation on individuals or corporations. Mm. They are unwilling to compromise when it comes to spending in a lot of ways. They'll draw a bottom line.
Jonathan Allen, you spend a lot of time on the Hill. You know a lot of people. Give me the backstory here, because we're hearing that the Speaker, John Boehner, spent a lot of time with the president. They were hashing out a deal. It looked like something was going to happen, and then bam, it was popped like a balloon, and people are saying the man who did it was Eric Cantor, the majority leader.
Well, the details of what was being talked about between Speaker Boehner and Barack Obama were leaked before those talks broke down, and essentially there was information out there that Boehner was talking taxes with the president.
Yeah.
That's what undid it. The degree to which the majority leader had any part in that, I don't know, but I will say this, he wouldn't need to. There's enough of a resistance to that approach from enough places in the Republican Party that he wouldn't need to undercut Boehner. Boehner was undercut by walking too far out from his flock.
Tell me about Eric Cantor. Do you think that he has clear ambitions? He wants Boehner's job?
I don't think there's any doubt that he wants to be Speaker of the House at some point or something above that. He may want to run for president at some point. I think, you know, Cantor came to the Congress in 2001 and swiftly moved up through the Republican leadership ranks. He's always been seen as a climber. He's always been good at that. And I think that's what he knows, is moving up, and how to do that. And right now, he's in a position where he's got a seat at the negotiating table. And he risks that, I think, a little bit by being seen as someone who's always trying to undercut the speaker, whether or not that's a fair portrait, because a lot of people will assign that motive even when it's not going on.
Could he, in theory, become the next speaker or the leader of the Republicans in Congress if Boehner stepped down?
It's certainly possible, but I think he would probably face some dissent. And I think he is a divisive figure in some ways. I think he would likely draw some sort of a challenge. There's certainly a set of people who think that he's been unfair to Boehner, that he sought to undercut him, and sometimes at the expense of the party as a whole. Somebody said to me the other day, one Republican member said, just remember, he's all about Eric.
The impression that he's leaving is that, in a sense, he is really the obstacle here to a deal. Do you think that's accurate?
I think this gets into personalities really fast, and it's kind of a shame, because these people are dealing with a lot more than their own egos and their own stature and the way they talk to each other in a room, and perhaps they should spend a little more time worried about the the larger public policy. I think Eric Cantor is, as his staffers would say, doing to the best of his ability representing the Republican conference in these talks, and I haven't heard anything come from him that doesn't reflect their feelings.
Jonathan Allen, if there is no deal by August 2nd and the United States does indeed default, do you think the public will blame the Republicans?
I don't know. I'll be somewhere with my gold bars stashed away. I think that'll be the messaging war afterward, will be who won and who lost. And I think they'll spend the next, you know, year and a half trying to make that case. My sense is that the president of the United States has the most to lose of anyone.
That's Jonathan Allen. He covers Congress for Politico. Jonathan, thanks.
Thank you.